Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hello everybody, my name's Tom Spoff. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, which is a website dedicated entirely to Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. You can find that website at wolvesblog.com. You can follow us on Twitter at wolvesblog or on Facebook at facebook.com/wolvesblog.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm Ali. You can find me at Man in the Post on all your social media, and one of the main podcasters over there, where we do pretty much what Kev does here. Weekend reviews and just talk about all things football in general.
Yep, definitely worth a listen as well, and people should check out Wolves Blog, regardless of whether or not they're Wolves fans at all. But we'll start elsewhere. We'll start with Steve Bruce, who just managed his 1,000th Premier League game. Today, Newcastle lost 3-2 to Tottenham. But instead of this being some kind of celebration of a manager reaching such an important milestone, I think that puts him top six or top five all time in matches managed in the Premier League. We're talking about him potentially being on the way out. At a point in the match, both sets of fans were singing sacked in the morning to Steve Bruce. So I guess my first kind of overall question of this show is, will he be? Will he be sacked in the morning?
I don't know about in the morning, but I think he will be sacked very soon. It might take till the afternoon, or it might take till later in the week. I think Jake, the resident Newcastle fan, made a good point. I think he said on Twitter that it's such an open goal for the new owners to sack him, because it's just such great publicity for them amongst the fan base that, you know, the longer he stays, the more the opposite will become true, that you know, the questions will be, why haven't you sacked him? Particularly because, you know, taking away all the ownership issues, they haven't won a game. I mean, we're halfway through October. They've had some favourable fixtures where they really should have got a result, and they haven't done it. So I think he would be on borrowed time under any circumstances, really. So I think the what's probably going on in the background is that they're probably thinking about who they've got to get in, because it's all very well getting rid of him, but you do need someone to be steering the ship, and they are in a perilous situation. And whatever you might think about Steve Bruce, he is an experienced Premier League manager, so they might see it that he's as good a pair of hands at the moment as they might be able to get. So until they line someone else up, they might stick with him a bit longer. But I do think that position is becoming untenable, and it's probably sapping a bit of the optimism around the club. So to, you know, get back to your original question, I think he will be sacked. Will it happen this week? I'd be more surprised if he was still in charge for the next game, put it that way.
Yeah, I can only echo everything Thomas just said, really. Whether it's tomorrow morning or this week, he needs to go soon, because the fans dislike him as much as Mike Ashley. And I think once that goes, there will be that aura lifted around the team. But as Thomas says, they really need to have who they want in charge next, because we know they're going to be given, you know, a decent amount of funds to spend, and it needs to be spent wisely. The talk of Frank Lampard is really scary for Newcastle fans. But I think it's really only a matter of time when he goes. But you know what? Let's give him a bit of credit. I mean, 1,000th game in charge, and he has handled himself with quite a bit of dignity, I guess, in this time. But for Newcastle fans, I think they're glad to see the back of him, really.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. It might not literally be the morning, but it's certainly coming. And as Jake said, it's a very easy way to get the fans even more on side. And the atmosphere to start the match was incredible. Jake had also talked to me before the match about how It was going to be about as raucous St. James Park as it had ever been, and how much impact that could have on the match. It did in the first 10 minutes. After that, a little bit less so. But I also agree with you, Ali. It is a remarkable achievement, and he should be applauded for making it this far. But he has not had the most remarkable career, although the fact that he has continued to get chances, I think, must be testament to something that maybe we haven't seen, at least in the last few years. Do we feel like this is kind of the end of that whole era of manager that kept sweeping in to go to like the lower five teams in the table, try to save them, try to get stabilized before those clubs either moved on to try to move up the table or ended up getting relegated?
I don't know. I mean, you know, Big Sam came into West Brom last year and he did quite well. I think if the season had been a bit longer, they would have stayed up. He seemed, by the end of it, he seemed to have quite a good grasp of his team, and they were quite a competitive outfit. So I wouldn't say never. There's a sort of theory that Watford seem to sack their managers so and think that they can bring someone in and get that bounce. So, but I think of that old guard, you know, if you're talking about, they all kind of get lumped in together, don't they? But your Bruce, your Pardews, your Allardyces, those managers, for whatever reason, who got multiple jobs in the Premier League, and operated around clubs. Sometimes they took clubs who were at the bottom and made them mid-table teams, or sometimes they didn't really improve things that much and they got moved on. I think football clubs are casting the net further with their managers now. It's following suit with the players. They're happy to go more global, and obviously that opens up a market to more possibilities. So those British managers who kind of dined out on just hanging around and waiting for a job to become available, might not find it as easy. But then again, whenever any job becomes available now, you're already seeing names like Eddie Howe and Frank Lampard. So is it just a case that it's the next generation of those managers, you know, managers that have done all right? You know, Howe did quite well at Bournemouth, but ultimately they were relegated. Lampard did some good things at Derby and okay at Chelsea. But ultimately you can see that Tuchel has taken them on another level with quite a similar group of players. But they still seem to be linked with every job that becomes available. I don't know really. It's interesting to see why certain managers have stock, because I mean, you would have probably put David Moyes in that category before his kind of resurgence at West Ham. But then he's, you know, got into that club and restabilized them and actually made them a serious entity again. So, you know, I mean, maybe we shouldn't write off managers. They come with sort of reputation and baggage from previous, positions. But sometimes you've got to think, well, maybe they've learned from those jobs and it can make them a better manager. And I think, like I say, David Moyes is an example of a coach who, you know, was being given a bit of a kick in from some of his previous jobs. But he's come back and sort of, you know, made his mark again. So, I don't know. I don't know, really, to answer your question. I still think you'll probably see some of those managers knocking around, and teams who are struggling in the Premier League may still decide that they just get rid of a manager and turn to someone of that, you know, that calibre.
Yeah, I feel we've got a couple more years left. I look at teams like Burnley, West Ham, if things were to go wrong with Moyes, or they keep going well and Moyes decides to leave, but Teams like that, what, as Thomas said, Watford changed their manager every second week. So Sam Allardyce is definitely a shout there. But yeah, I think we've got a couple of years left, but I think we're slowly starting to see the evolution leaving of those. And there's a lot of younger managers coming through now that are highly talked about in the Championship. I think we'll start to see more and more being given a chance. As more money comes into the league, you do feel that teams are looking to progress more.
Gotcha. Yeah, I just don't think we'll ever see Alan Pardew again. But you guys make a decent point that we might see. Yeah, that we might see Sam again. I don't know if we'll see Steve Bruce again, but maybe if he goes to the Championship and got promoted, we could see him one last time. But regardless, 1,000 Premier League matches is no mean feat. Obviously, not even the biggest news at Newcastle going on. We had Jake on for a club segment last week to talk about the takeover. Obviously, we're not going to hold today's match against the new ownership, although certainly many people could hold many things against them. But I was just curious what your guys' thoughts were from like a league-wide perspective, what the impact of having another basically oil state taking ownership of a Premier League club.
Well, I mean, there's two sides to it, really. There's the non-football side of it, which I think everyone's in kind of universal agreement about, that it's, you know, clubs getting investment from questionable sources is not great. It's not great for our game. But I do understand the Newcastle sort of fan perspective of, well, hasn't that ship sailed already? Why are we being made the scapegoat? So that's certainly a reasonable thing to say. So I don't think anything else really needs to be said on that subject, because I think everyone is more or less on the same page. On the football side of it, then, you know, if you take away the source of that money and just see it that they've now got money and they could be a competitive force of the Premier League, I think that's only a good thing, because why not? You know, I think there's more competition at the top of the table is a good thing. And I think it, you know, I think that is good for the competition. We don't want the same 4 or 6 teams being up there all the time, you know. And I think eventually, I think the Premier League is quite a good competition. And, you know, I think the top teams find it harder to continually best even, you know, the mid-table teams now. I think it is quite a competitive environment. But I think what we can benefit from is other teams who can really go to war with the elite and, you know, get into that space. So my perspective is, good luck to them. You know, I hope it works out well for them. I think I tend to look at clubs and think, have they had a good run of it lately, or have they, you know, had a bit of a naff time? And I think the feeling is at Newcastle for a long time they've had the, you know, not been had the greatest time of things. So maybe they're due a good few years. So you know, I'm just like everyone else, fascinated to see how it unfolds and whether they can use that investment to actually get where everyone seems to think they are going.
Yeah, I personally have no issue with it. I think clubs, football is worth so much money now. The only people who can invest in clubs and bring money into clubs are, how can I put it? But none of them are very honourable, put it that way. I think there's levels to it. But, you know, as Thomas said, and I'm like, you've got to be happy for the Newcastle fans in this. I'd be delighted if they bought over Liverpool at this point. But as Thomas said it really well there, yeah, another club, you know, it's so long as it's done properly. I do like the way City did it. At least they invested in the area, the youth set up, you know, they didn't just come in and do like the PSG format sort of thing. So if they can go about it the right way and they invest wisely and, you know, buy the right players and build themselves up, because Newcastle are a big team, the fan base are incredible, they've been through a lot. So yeah, I'm all for it, and I'm actually quite excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, and I do think that's an excellent point. And Jake mentioned that as well in the segment that we did with him, which was obviously dubious records outside of England. But if they come in and they invest in the area and they create jobs and uplift a city that is often neglected at a governmental level, then all of a sudden you could, you know, see a lot of rejuvenation there. And in that particular city and for that particular club, it be a goods potentially outweigh the bads. Although I think from a moralistic perspective, quite a deep hole to dig out of. But regardless, it could have a very positive impact for the team and the city. And as you said at the beginning there, Thomas, we all know what the other side is. And I don't think we need to argue with too many people that side is not ideal. We've obviously seen this happen before with Chelsea and Abramovich, with City and their ownership. Probably not going to be able to accelerate as quickly as those clubs did now in the era of financial fair play, which technically does do something sometimes. But I was just curious, do we see them on a path to reach top four to start winning titles? And if so, what is that time span? Or do you think that because of limitations and stuff like that, that they never will reach that height?
I think it'll be very difficult, but, you know, it all comes down to the quality of their recruitment, ultimately. Having money is a tremendous advantage, but it's how you spend it. I can sort of talk with a degree of experience in the sense that Wolves in the Championship, when they were taken over, a bottom-half Championship team, all this money came in, and their recruitment the first year was absolutely abysmal. We could have easily been relegated. Then they cleared all of that out over one summer. made some serious investments. And you know, within the space of 2 years, we went from being a bottom half of the Championship team to being a team that made it to the quarterfinals of the Europa League, FA Cup semi-finalists. So you can make big gains in a short period of time. And in fact, Wolves themselves were only 6-7 points off the Champions League places in that second season in the Premier League. So it just goes to show that you can, if you get a group of players together quickly, and they're a good group, and you've got quality in there, you can get right up there and challenge, particularly if one of those big four teams doesn't have a great season, and that gap becomes closer. And I think we've also seen with Leicester, they've done it a sort of more organic way. Obviously, they had that title winning season, but then they've subsequently been in the top four mix, having been lower down. So they've grown organically through excellent recruitment and come very close. So I wouldn't say it's impossible for them to do that, but it will, be completely determined by how well they use the investment. They're going to be offered every single mercenary there is going. And I think the first challenge is of whoever's in charge there is to make sure they don't end up taking the easy wins, the big name players who want, £200,000 a week. They're more than happy to go and play for Newcastle, but they want paying, and maybe they've had their best days. I'm thinking players who, maybe Barcelona want to get off the books, your Coutinho's, players of that ilk and profile who haven't really done a lot lately, but are still going to demand mega money. I think they'd be better off Newcastle trying to bring in players who in the Premier League in recent years or another elite European league have shown that week in, week out, they're competitive players with the right mentality. They've got problems at the back, for instance. They've been linked with Tarkowski at Burnley. Someone like that who is going to go and, improve that defence for them from where they are now, for instance, would be a good first stage signing. I think that's what they need to do, just strengthen up the team, become a sort of, a proper competitive, mid to top end of the, mid-table range team. And then from there, then you try and make the gains. So it's not impossible, but the leap to the top four is huge. And then the leap from just scrambling into the top four to challenging for the title is even bigger. Because as I see it, your Man City, Liverpool and Chelsea, they're miles ahead of everyone else. And, that gap to them is monumental. So I think, it's 10 years minimum, I'd say, for challenging for the title, even if they do very well. But getting into the Champions League, just getting a squad together and pushing for that top four, it is possible, but they'd have to make a lot of really good moves in the market.
Yeah, word for word, what Thomas said almost. I reckon it is around that 10-year mark. It all comes down to the recruitment of manager and who they put in place to oversee scouting and player recommendations. As Thomas pointed, we've seen when Man City were bought over, the Rubinho type signings, etc. They need to just do it smartly. Don't try and go from where they're just now 18th, maybe 19th, and try and jump straight to the top four. It needs to be a season after season progress, as Thomas says, bring in a few experienced Premier League players, but still with that bit of hunger, with a bit of point to prove. Build a Newcastle squad isn't actually the worst if you actually look at it player by player. As Thomas again mentioned, and what we've spoke about on our podcast, is they need to be careful of teams like Barcelona and even Liverpool, players, teams like Liverpool and City, just how much they're going to now expect for players or try and offload somebody clever. And they just, their biggest issue, I think, and their biggest thing they need to aim for is getting their manager in as quickly as they can and almost identifying the style. I've always enjoyed the way Liverpool have, especially in the Klopp years, really. We haven't always just signed a name that's really world famous. They look for a player for certain positions and then they go for that. And I think Newcastle, they need an identity back, formation, system, how they're going to play, and almost find players for their systems makes it easier to click and should make it more fun in the long run for the fans.
Yeah, I think that's a great point and would require them rebuffing the advances of some of those mercenaries that Thomas was talking about earlier. But yeah, I totally agree. And I don't know any of the moves that they've announced have been a director of football, because that would be a very important position to fill. I think Jake mentioned that they were looking at Ralf Rangnick. But yeah, if they can build that solid squad, then it could help drive them to that. But I don't think it's going to be like the next year or two, as you guys are saying. I think it'll be a bit longer before we see them really, you know, challenging the peak of English football at the soonest. We'll go from there to talking about two teams that have recently been near the top. Manchester United less successfully, obviously Leicester winning the title a few years back under Ranieri, who we might address a bit later. But it ended up being a fascinating watch for the neutral, especially the ending with three really late goals, and then that bleeding into Thomas, your match for those in the US, where the telecast jumped from one to the other for that exciting ending as well. But I was curious what you guys made of that match and how exciting it was to watch, and if it was a statement of Manchester United maybe having been a bit overrated due to their summer signings, or if the like early speak of the demise of Leicester has been a bit too presumptive.
Yeah, a bit of both, I think. A bit of both. I think Leicester haven't been playing well, but they've got a lot of injuries. Rodgers has got a couple of players he's trying to work into that team. But they were performing below their level. I think they were quite lucky actually to get out of that Crystal Palace match with a draw, despite the fact they were two up, because I think they were lucky to be two up. I think they were lucky to hold on a bit by the end to get that point. But that said, I always felt their level would improve, and it's no surprise really. I looked at the team that he put out against Man United, and it was kind of tried and tested. He had Maddison back in there, who I think is an important player for them. He had obviously Vardy and Iheanacho, who are both tremendous Premier League strikers. He's got, you know, Tielemans, he's got the Soyuncu at the back. I mean, I just felt like that looked like a proper Leicester team. And I suspected they would give Man United a game. I thought Man United would do more in the game. I know they scored the two goals, but it's the problem with Man United is, I think that everyone can see it, is that they're top loaded. You know, they've got about, what, six, seven players across that front three they could be picking. And they've got a midfield that's just not, the balance isn't right. And they haven't got the legs in there. They don't press enough. They don't get around the pitch and tackle enough. There's no sort of pattern to their play, how they build attacks. They'll go around blowing teams away this season, and I still think they'll finish fourth. If I had to predict the position of one team where they'll finish, and you said you had to put all your money on that, I would put on Man United over any other team in the league to finish fourth. That is where I think they will be come the end of the season, because they're not going to finish above Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City, and I don't think anyone else will finish above them, because I think their firepower alone will probably see them through. But yeah, they're not a great side, and they're not actually a great watch, if I'm honest. I've got a friend who's a Man United fan, and I watch a few games with him, and they're not great, because it is so disjointed. But teams do kind of pay them respect because of the attack they've got, and they'll sort of sit back a bit, and Man United aren't great at breaking teams down. So yeah, I think just Man United in a difficult moment. I think Solskjaer's got a real job on his hands to sort out the issues in that midfield. And I'm not sure he's got the solutions, because I still think he'd probably like to revert to playing McTominay and Fred. But then the fans don't like that, and it doesn't make them as attractive. And I just think they just missed the boat in not signing that midfielder that they so obviously needed in the summer. So I think it could be a difficult period for Man United, and they've got some difficult games coming up. So I think the pressure is only going to get more intense for them. So yeah, very interested to see how they do in the Champions League. Very interested to see how that Man United Liverpool game goes next weekend, which I'm sure Ali is too.
Yeah, I think I'll start with the Man United side because it makes me smile more. Do you know what? Like, we have a lot of fun at Ole's expense, and quite rightly so, because he deserves it. The Man United this summer, and arguably last summer as well, reminds me very much of Chelsea's last summer. You know, they were signing players for name value only. Like, we've just mentioned the Newcastle signing, but not just signing players, you know, because, you know, we believe they're good. You know, it's like Football Manager signings almost. You clearly see they need improvement in defence. Okay, they got Varane, but they still got Maguire. They still spent 80 million on Harry Maguire. And the midfield is just, I don't want to say anything too harsh here, because we're playing them next week and watch them turn out like Xavi and Iniesta displays. But yeah, the midfield really is quite pathetic. They're very limited. they keep buying players to make Pogba better. Surely that would be the issue here then. Start looking that way. I think you mentioned, Thomas, yeah, they've got about six players to cover front three positions. Did they really need Jadon Sancho? He's a wonderful player. He's barely played for them. Donny van de Beek, I feel he's locked in a cupboard somewhere. I'm not sure he even exists anymore. It's just Jamie from the Burnley representative on here. I was messaging him yesterday on Twitter, and he's saying, like, Man United really need to sack. And I'm telling him to say that quietly. You know, we want Ollie getting a new contract. But you can really see it going down the Chelsea route there when they do finally realise that they've invested a lot of money on a lot of world superstars, and it's not going well. But they will, as you said, Thomas, they'll finish top four purely because the amount of talent they have there, it's impossible not to finish in the top four because they'll win games purely on they will get chances. And even if they're not good chances, they have the quality in a player like Ronaldo. Like, Ronaldo signing was the biggest waste of time, really, ever in the summer. They didn't need him. They've got Cavani. They've got other forwards. They're spending ridiculous money on him. But he is going to create chances out of nothing. On Leicester, I mean, Kev, you know my thoughts on Brendan Rodgers. But he said something after this international break. I think it was just after or just before when he was speaking, and he was quite open and honest about how results had been disappointing and how he wasn't like happy with how him and the team had done. Where, like, he needed to get back to the pressing side of things. And Brendan Rodgers got quite a big ego. And to see him being almost quite humble there for once. So I don't know, in his older age, he's maturing. But their team's very good. And I think overall their 11 is definitely better than Man United's. Man United have definitely got better superstars. So the result doesn't surprise me. The biggest thing to come from this game, I don't know if any of you guys heard it, was the commentators, probably you not, you Kev, we've been on an American stream, but the commentators over here were talking about how strange it was for Man United to be poor defensively now Harry Maguire was back. And that just made me chuckle.
How possibly?
Yeah, it's a very interesting take. Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think they're literally too talented to fall out of the top four, but we were just talking about how important team construction will be for Manchester United with money, and they addressed certain needs, but maybe not the profiles that were needed to get the best out of that team, and I think they've gotten away with that some in the past because I don't think Ole's tactics are so developed that certain players don't fit it. I think he's just like, get me a collection of good players and I'll put them on a pitch and hopefully get them to play well together. But I think you guys are both spot on with the things that they didn't address. That lack of a defensive midfielder is just shocking. And the idea that they were like, let's go get Ronaldo to be our, like, one of four strikers that we have, rather than addressing your biggest need, which either hurts your one of your more talented players in Pogba, who doesn't work very well in a base two of a 4-2-3-1. It leaves out some of your other good players. It's a very strange choice that they made there. And I think because of it, they won't be anywhere near the title race come the end of the season. And Leicester, I think they've just dealt with so many bad breaks the last couple of years, with injuries at the wrong time, with Rodgers making the wrong choices at the wrong time. They really should have been in the Champions League the last 2 years, and the fact that they haven't been, I think, is really hard. And I think we're seeing a reemergence of the big four. So whether their window has passed or not, time will tell. But I think results like this show that they still can play with the air quote big boys, but we'll see where they wind up come the end of the year. All right, I wanted to wrap up this section by talking about defense, because both of your clubs are actually top five right now in goals conceded, the good way. And I was just curious from you guys if you think that's more of a player thing, if you think it's more of a tactics thing, if the midfielders are protecting the back line, or if it's just individual brilliance at large. So yeah, why are both of your defenses so good?
Well, I mean, I think we'll probably give different answers, really. I mean, I don't want to answer on Ali's behalf, but I'd say for Liverpool, it's probably more about outstanding personnel and their availability. But I mean, for Wolves, I was almost a bit surprised when you sent me that information, that stat, because I hadn't really looked at it and thought of us as being really robust defensively. And obviously, we conceded twice yesterday to Villa. But yeah, like you say, we have done better. I think partly for Wolves, it's that we're having more possession. this season under Bruno Lage than we did under Nuno. We're not being as passive. We're not just sitting back and defending in a shape and trying to absorb and counter. We're sort of getting on the front foot more. So bizarrely, through being more attacking, we're being better defensive. It's kind of the Pep Guardiola way, isn't it? If you've got the ball, the other team can't score, basically. So we are having a bit more. I think it's a bit of that, and the fact that there's probably we've still got some of the resilience of the Nuno years, because with Bruno Lage, he sort of came thinking he'd play a back four, but he's still persisting with a back five. So we've got those three centre halves who are quite familiar with that system, and that probably helps a bit. And then we're still playing with Ruben Neves and João Moutinho just sitting in front of a back three. So you've still got a fair old defensive block there. Even though we're trying to be more progressive in possession and perhaps push the wing backs up further and stuff like that. It's good, really, for Wolves that they're able to do that. And it's just as well, really, because even though we're creating a lot of chances, we're not scoring a lot of goals. We're still only a goal-a-game team. And obviously that needs to improve. Or we need to keep not conceding more than 0-1 in a game. It's hard, really, because I think a lot of Wolves fans were absolutely gutted that we didn't sign a centre-half in the summer transfer window. I wasn't as gutted as everyone else, but I think that there was a thought that we're still playing with midfielders in defence, because Saïss and Cody were midfielders when we signed them, and they've become centre-halves. And obviously they were Championship midfielders, and now they're Premier League defenders. So there's a feeling that maybe, we need someone more proven at an elite level if we really want to push on and be a top half team. And I think they Bruno Lage has already talked about the importance of bringing in a defender in January. So hopefully it's a case that they fit into an already good system by that point, and it strengthens us further.
Yeah, slightly different, as Thomas alluded to there. Yeah, we, fortunately, this season, we have obviously full availability. Actually, probably too many at the moment. Our new signing, which we strengthened in the summer, Kanate, has barely played. I think he's played maybe two games. Matip's managing to stay fit all season. Virgil's played every minute of every game this season for Holland and Liverpool. I think he's 13th game yesterday, maybe 14, possibly. Can't remember what I read. And he's played the 90 minutes in all games, which is almost a surprise. So whilst our defence is good just now, I still feel it will get better as well, the more fit he gets. And I'm obviously completely biased, but I genuinely believe that Virgil van Dijk's the best centre-back in the world at the moment. And I also believe Fabinho's maybe the best defensive holding midfielder as well. So when you've got the two of them together, along with obviously a world-class goalkeeper who's definitely top three, maybe top five goalkeepers in the world as well, we're quite fortunate to have just exceptional personnel. We've got very attacking fullbacks who are quite good at getting back as well, but our midfield's based really around to suit them, because our midfielders are more workhorses than anything creative, which is maybe where we actually lack in the team. But even, I don't know if any of you watched as much of the game yesterday, but Mo Salah spent a lot of time at right back as well when Trent was ahead of him, and I think that just says a lot about how our system and how much Klopp gets players to work for him, which we've seen from the beginning, from when he came in, what he managed to achieve with a rather mediocre team originally compared to what we have now. But yeah, certainly for us who try to be a much more attacking, almost gung-ho team at times, we just have a lot of quality in the back. And the defenders in, like Matip and Virgil, they're quick as well, so they can sit that bit higher line because they make good recovery as well.
Yeah, well, while you got there different ways, both really impressive thus far this season, and good luck to both of you on doing it. Though, no offense, Thomas, I feel like Liverpool may have more luck in that regard season long, but definitely interesting trend to pick up on this early in the season. All right, now we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests. All right.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we are back. Thomas, we'll start off with you talking about Wolves. We alluded to it a little bit earlier on the very exciting Saturday that we had, although Sunday didn't really disappoint either. But losing 2-0, you have 20 minutes left in the match. You score three times from your perspective and from the perspective of Wolves fans. What the heck happened?
Yeah, hard to know, really. I think I said to you off air that the game to me looked gone. Villa got that second goal, and they seemed to have that spring in their step. Wolves were misplacing passes, and it just looked like a matter of time before probably Villa got another goal on the break and saw the game off. But we've got Adama Traore, and he went on a computer game run down the wing, hurdled a couple of challenges, won us a corner, and from that point, Villa just couldn't get out. We just had a series of set pieces, second balls, recoveries, into the box all the time. And eventually, Ruben Neves threaded a ball through to Daniel Podence and got that first goal back. And then I think the nerves just set in for Villa, and it was penalty area, ping pong for the second. And then another Adama Traore computer game run, got us a free kick, and Ruben Neves deflected free kick in for the victory. So it's just a mad 10 minutes, really, that can happen in football, can't it? And it just shows why you do keep pushing, because I think in the Premier League, 9 times out of 10, that game's gone. But if you keep pushing and pushing and you maintain your level, you can shake mistakes out of teams. And fortunately for Wolves, it's just one of those days where the ball's dropped for us in the penalty area, and when we took advantage of that. Happy days.
Yeah, very impressive to turn that around. Like you say, it doesn't happen a lot, but when it does, it feels really good. And if you keep fighting, luck favors the prepared, one of those kind of situations where if you keep pushing and you keep getting in the right spots, you still have chances to come back in the match, as you did. I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about Bruno Lage. Man, I'll figure that out by the end of the season, I promise. But while I do so, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Willy Boly, and then a larger conversation about the players that might not be getting a look in under Bruno that most people are used to seeing in your 11 regularly.
Yeah, well, it's Bruno Lage. I can tell you that now. It's like a Lage with a soft G. That was literally the first question they asked him, because no one knows who he is. They're like, what's your name? And he was like, yes, Bruno Lage. Bruno Lage, yeah, I think with some of the familiar names, it's just come down to injury as much as anything. With Willy Boly, the problem with him is he just keeps pulling up with hamstring problems whenever he plays more than one game. He just seems to perpetually have problems with that hamstring. And I think that's limited his progress. He did play in that League Cup game against Spurs, I'm sure you'll remember. But that's been it. And I think the Max Kilmans, who's been on the sidelines, been a reserve player for us ever since we've been back in the Premier League, I think it's just been his time to have a run in the team, because it was either, he's going to get some games or he's going to go. And I think he's just taken that chance. A lot of our fans really like him. I'm not entirely convinced, because I think there's a lack of aggression there. And I feel like the presence of Boly would be big for us if we could get a good run of games out of him. But as you say, Kev, it's hard to argue with the stats if you're Willy Boly, because you're thinking, well, we've only conceded 8 goals so far. We've got one of the best defences. And, we're eighth in the table. Well, we were eighth before the game kicked off today. But we've got 12 points, 4 wins, which for us, really, I think as a club where we are, because we're kind of rebuilding post-Nuno, I think we're in a good position. And I think Bruno Lage has proved that he's capable of setting teams up in the Premier League and getting results, which is big for him, because he didn't come with a big reputation And I think some other neutrals might have looked at Wolves and thought, oh, a couple of key players have left in recent years. The manager's gone. Is this where it's going to properly crumble for them? So to be where we are after eight games, I'm very happy for him. And I'm very happy for Bruno Lage because he's just sort of going about his business in a very low profile way. And yeah, long may that continue.
Gotcha. And then I have one last personal, selfish question for you, which is, did Nuno ever just not use any subs in a match for Wolves? Because I think Tottenham fans are very much scratching our heads after having been 3-1 up and him just deciding to stick with the 11 he named the whole match.
Yeah, I think he was quite slow to use his subs a lot of times. Yeah, I think he when we first came up to the Premier League, we had this ridiculous run of games where we picked the same 11. I think if he's one of these managers who, if he thinks he's found a solution that he likes, then he's going to persist with that. He's going to get as much out of it as he possibly can. I mean, I think for the first two seasons, it was a constant conversation amongst pundits. Like, how can Wolves just continually not get any injuries and just constantly pick the same players? It like defies logic. And then it eventually caught up with us and we got loads of fatigue related injuries with all these players. And that's probably a bit of, you know, we go back to Willy Bolly, why his hamstrings are absolutely hammered is because he's getting on in years a bit now. And he played a hell of a lot of games under Nuno because he was the main man back there, really. So yeah, I mean, that's just a... It's an interesting thing with managers, I suppose, isn't it? You know, how they use their substitutes. But yeah, I think that was certainly a theme, particularly in the. But, you know, Wolves were good with that. That worked well for us. So I think at Tottenham, it's probably because, like you say, he's probably found some players that he feels he's got a high degree of trust in. And when they're out on the pitch and the result's still in the balance, he's probably thinking, I rely on this group. And whoever I send on, I'm not 100% certain about because... you know, he probably has questions. And I think that's probably only natural because he's still getting to know that group at Tottenham. And I think there's some question marks over a lot of players in that squad for him. So I think that may become a persistent theme that you might have to live with.
Interesting. You know, we thought nobody could do later substitutions than Poch, but none seems to have outdone him a touch already. All right, we'll come to you now, Ali, to talk a little bit about Liverpool. Really big win on the scoreline, obviously against Watford and a new manager, which we'll get to in a second here. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on the match overall to begin with.
Yeah, I briefly mentioned, obviously, pre-pod that I was slightly concerned going into this game just with the two players I mentioned before, missing Fabinho and missing Alisson. The biggest thing, obviously, it wasn't Adrian that came in, it was Kelleher. So that was a bonus. But Fabinho missing in midfield is always a concern. Obviously, Henderson's getting older and injuries. Milner's, I think, 95-year-old at this point, but he's a cyborg, so it's okay. And Naby Keita's fitness is obviously in and out, shall we say. I mean, when he plays for us, I think in his last 15 games, we've scored 46 goals, conceded 6. So the success rate is there. When he plays, he's definitely influential. He has a positive impact on the team. I do feel Klopp doesn't trust him a lot of the time, but obviously with Curtis Jones getting injured. So the concerns were there. Obviously, there's always the talk of the new manager bouncing. Watford hadn't actually been bad this season. I feel harsh just slating Watford again, but we were very good. We looked on it from the very beginning. Watford definitely helped us. I think I said the last time we were on, Kev, about Mo Salah, you know, being arguably the best player in the world at the moment, you know, in form. And the last few weeks just reassured it for me that I don't even think it's arguably now. I just don't know at the moment who's performing to the same level he is. The goal he scored yesterday and obviously the goal last week against City was just out of this world, and he's creating chances. He just seems to be on a completely different level. But just overall, just we really made it look like a training game, which is always a positive coming back from the international break.
Yeah, to your Salah point, he currently leads the league in shots on target by 8, by the way, and he's second in chances created. So that's behind Trent on his same side on the same team. So yeah, he's pretty decent. And I'm sure a lot of people will superimpose that goal with the City goal and all that stuff. But I wanted to talk to you about Roberto Firmino instead. We can talk about Salah all day long, every week, about how good he is. But Firmino rocking up with a hat trick was a little surprising, and it seems like for maybe over a year plus now, people have been trying to push him out of the team. Maybe Jota should play there instead. Maybe he should go by like a traditional 9 to play up front in between Salah and Mane on the wings, although people have had their complaints about Mane, but he seems to be in better form now than he was at the start of the year. But I was just curious your thoughts on Firmino. Is he still going to be the answer going forward in the middle of this team, or as this team begins to age, will you start looking for either a deputy there or a true replacement?
I was one of the ones who had grown, you know, extremely frustrated with Firmino. We fell in love with him the first couple of seasons, and he was remarkable. I think everybody will agree. He almost transformed that number nine role the way, you know, Klopp had got him playing, and he was key to a lot of things. The last couple of seasons, it's been really frustrating. You know, when the wingers are getting doubled up on, we're relying on a lot of the chances were falling to Firmino, and he just wasn't taking them. This season, I believe he has a goal or assist every, now let me get this right, is it every 0.35 or 0.55? One of those two, which is, except, you know, it's actually higher than Mo's. Obviously, he's not played as many minutes, and that's why that stat's obviously slightly different. But his form this season, goal and assist-wise, is phenomenal. And if that continues, it's great. I still think we need to look at someone else, not of the same kind, maybe more of a, not a traditional number nine. I wouldn't want the Kane type number nine. Like, it doesn't, I just don't think it would suit Mane and Salah in particular.
Do you need more mobility?
Yeah, I don't ask me who. I'm not very well, you know, out there on, you know, on international football. I don't watch international games. I don't really watch like other leagues unless there's a big game on them. I barely watch Liverpool these days, to be honest. But I do think we need more of a, now that the way Mane and Salah play, I think they would benefit. Bobby's goal in this game, you know, the one that Milner cut across goal, that's where we lack sometimes. It's not very often Firmino's there. I always talk about when Man City, two seasons ago, Sterling scored like 23 goals and about 15 of them were the exact same goal, you know, just cutbacks, and there was Sterling just running in. I do feel we just need a bit of mobility and more of a number nine in the long term. I think, again, we mentioned the last time I was on, Kev, it was that front three have been together now and played a lot of minutes together. So they are coming to their, almost their shelf life as a three. Although this season really just makes me look stupid saying that because, you know, they're all scoring goals, they're all getting assists. I think the front three can't be far off being like three of the top five or six goal scorers in the league. I haven't checked, but Mane and Salah have almost scored in every game, and I think that's Firmino's sixth of the season as well. I can't think of many players, you know, who are scoring more.
Yeah, it's really weird. Firmino is not even top three on your own side in shots on target, but still does have the goals coming as well. So maybe his demise was a little too early there. I also wanted to talk to you, as I've kind of alluded to twice now, the fact that you're the first side that got to get a glimpse of Claudio Ranieri's Watford side. Obvious takeaways, target Danny Rose. But I was curious if you picked up on anything else about the way he had Watford playing that might be interesting as we look at how they develop throughout the year.
Very, very negative yesterday. I don't know. I've watched Watford a couple of times this year, either highlight packages or, you know, just extended games for covering them for our show, obviously. But this was one of the worst I've seen them. There was just no... It was like, you know, when you get a group of guys together just at the park and nobody's ever met before, and then it's like, right, just go on and play. That really was what it was like. Every time they were getting the ball, I believe the first half, they only had 90 passes, and only 50% of them were accurate in the first half, which was very concerning.
Not great.
No. And I mean, I alluded to the Danny Rose might have been the worst individual performance. I have witnessed anyway. I mean, other players, teams can come at me as fans, and they'll probably actually Dejan Lovren against Spurs. Take that back. But
oh yeah, Danny, yeah. Let's just have him man mark Kane and Son was not, as it turns out, a great tactical idea.
No, but I don't know how well Danny Rose has played the rest of the season. Obviously, you know from the last couple of seasons what he was like, you know, in the Spurs team and then down to the youth setup. But I thought the Ranieri appointment was strange, but Watford are a strange club. I didn't think they were in any trouble to go down, but based on this weekend's performance from them, they've got a lot of work to do under Ranieri if he's trying to change their setup. But for me, it just lacked a lot of ambition. It was almost just a case of, now don't get me wrong, your first game against Liverpool is no easy, you know, way in. But I always feel if you're coming in against like a Liverpool or a City or even a Chelsea, isn't that almost like a free hit that you could be a bit more, you know, expressive, a bit more expansive and just, you know, let's almost enjoy yourselves, have fun, and let's work from there.
Yeah, it does feel like it was one of those matches where he set up that way to avoid being beat 5-0 and then was beat 5-0 because of it. Like, if you have the ball in the other half, kind of like what you were talking about earlier, Thomas, if you have the ball, other teams can't attack you with it. But yeah, he obviously chose not to do that, and it was a rough start. I still think their actual, like, best 11 is probably good enough to keep them up, but we'll see how that goes. They're currently outside of the relegation zone, and a win from Burnley, Newcastle, or Norwich wouldn't even get them up to them, so they do have a little bit of wiggle room if Ranieri can get this right pretty quickly, but I'm not sure there are too many people that would be going out of their way to bet on them staying up right now, even though in theory they should have a decent shot at doing so. All right, we'll head next into Player Watch, where I just wanted to talk to you guys about which of your summer signings have been the most impressive thus far.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Wolves, I would probably say there's not a lot of competition, I might add. We didn't do a lot of business, but Jose Sa, the goalkeeper, is the one I would probably highlight. You know, we lost Rui Patricio to Roma, and I think it was talked about for a long time before it actually happened that Patricio was going to go to Roma and then we were going to get Sar from Olympiacos, and that's exactly what happened. And they're very different goalkeepers. Patricio was your steady Eddie, stay on the line, save everything that goes near him, but don't really come and claim a lot. But he did very well for Wolves for a number of years, and I think people were slightly apprehensive. And Sar is a very different goalkeeper. He's more, you know, he's like a, what would you call him? Like a diet Edison, you know, he's like that kind of goalkeeper, very comfortable with the ball at his feet. Very light, sort of good shot, agile, good shot stopper. And I think that's kind of symbolic of our change in style really as well. We're now not just sitting back like Patricio would and on his line, we're sort of coming forward more and trying to play out from the back more proactively and create more interesting angles for passes. But I've just been very impressed with him. Been very impressed with him indeed. He's first and foremost done well with his hands, and he's made a lot of important saves, made a great save from Danny Ings yesterday. And he's even got an assist this season for Raul Jimenez's goal at Southampton. So yeah, there's nothing so far that makes me think we've downgraded, really. If anything, I think we've actually improved the team by having him there, which is a big compliment to him, because obviously Rui Patricio's a goalkeeper with an enormous number of international caps. So, yeah, Jose Sa for me. A couple of the others I'd mentioned, Trincao from Barcelona, hasn't really done much given his reputation he arrived with. Probably need more from him. Jose Sa for me.
Well, for me, I think we only signed one player, and that was Ibrahim Kanate. And so I take to say he's been our best signing, Kev. But he, granted, he's only played maybe twice. I saw
Harvey Elliott technically was counted as a transfer in post loan, but unfortunately, he's out for the year.
Well, I was going to mention Curtis Jones, who's I know he played minutes, but obviously he started the season almost as a regular in the midfield, and he has been quite a bright spark. I've not been his biggest fan almost. I've been quite critical. I didn't see what a lot of people you know, it was one of those, I didn't see him, you know, when you get these youth players coming through and they're good in spells, but you don't really quite think they would make it at that level. I thought he'd be a good Premier League player, but maybe not in the elite section. But he held his head up very well in those opening few weeks, and obviously got a disappointing injury over an international duty. So we'll see when he comes back in. Obviously, yeah, just mentioning Harvey Elliott there, obviously, first real, you know, impact he was making, and then that awful challenge. So hopefully he comes back from that, and hopefully he gets his chance again. You know, he can recover well and get back in, because he does look like a real talent. I mean, I don't know what both you guys think of him, but I mean, he's I like a player like that. You know, a bit of confidence about him and almost no fear.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I suppose this might have not been the best question for the two of you, given the limited signings, but. Yeah, pretty promising steps, I think, from both. And we'll wrap up with match previews, Thomas. We'll stick by starting with you. You're going to be facing Leeds away. What are your thoughts heading into that one?
Well, I mean, I just feel we've won four of the last five games. I feel quite buoyant about things, and it's like victories breed confidence, and we're kind of ahead of where I kind of anticipated we'd be at this point. So every match at the moment just feels like a bonus. And we're actually in the middle of a pretty winnable run of fixtures, playing teams, well, not playing the actual top teams for a while now. So, you know, I fancy us, really. I mean, Leeds on in a great moment. That's going to feel like a really big game for them, because they're going to look at it and think we can turn Wolves over at Elland Road. I don't really know what the status is of their players, because Rafinha and Calvin Phillips didn't play at Southampton yesterday, and Bamford was out. I don't know if any of those players or all of those players are going to be back for them next weekend. If they are, that will make a huge difference to that Leeds team. And they're obviously capable of beating us, because, you know, they beat plenty of good teams last season. I would say they didn't beat Wolves in either of our games. We got 2-1-0 wins, which is absolutely bananas when you consider the football Leeds were playing last season, and we weren't doing particularly great. So I was very happy indeed with those two wins. But yeah, I mean, I think the pressure's on them to get the result, and if we can go there and be defensively resilient, as we have been in a lot of games this season, we've got every chance. I mean, we didn't start with Raul Jimenez yesterday, so he should be refreshed after a week off. And, you know, hopefully get him back in the team, and we, you know, sort of pick up where we left off, more so against Newcastle than against Villa, because, you know, it was a late show at Villa and sort of more about digging in, whereas the performance against Newcastle was more fluidity to our attack. So I'm confident going there, because we've got the results in the bag, and it feels like a bonus. But I'll go for a draw, because we haven't had any draws yet. So I'll say 1-1.
Yeah, Atletico Madrid just gives me nightmares after a couple of years ago. That was the sign of the company getting shut down over here after letting all the fans in. But I'm fairly confident in this game. They do know how to defend and how to sit back and, you know, play that style that Simeone's got them in. But I think, obviously, Fabinho and Alisson coming back, as I've mentioned, you know, several times, they're key. The form, the front three are in, the defence. I didn't know we were in the top five, Kev, until you put it out. So all things look great for us, I guess. I do fancy. I don't think they'll attack us much. I'll go for a 2-0 win. I just don't see them scoring just now.
For United, you are away.
we've got them as well, haven't we? I'm going to, just because I can't be confident in that game. Let's just go for a 1-1 draw. So if we win, it'll be a nice bonus in my head. I just can't go anything above that.
I feel like the United match is one of those ones where you don't really want to win, because it could add to the pressure on Solskjaer, which seems to be a very delicate balance with some of the big sides. Is do we want to beat them heavily, or maybe keep them in the job another couple months? But
keep Solskjaer in a new contract.
Yeah, there you go. We'll see how that goes. And if you're a United fan, sorry, but that is largely how everyone else is thinking. That'll do it for us today, though. Guys, if you'd like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, guys. As always, you can read what I'm writing about Wolves at wolvesblog.com. Previews and match reports for all upcoming games. So if we're playing Wolves or you just want to get some tips for your fantasy football team or whatever, whatever floats your boat, you can jump onto wolvesblog.com or follow us on Twitter at wolvesblog.
Yep, thank you very much for having me on again, Kevin. It's been an absolute pleasure. You can find us at Man in the Post, as I said, on all the social media platforms. We have two podcasts a week, sometimes a little special one. You'll find us Mondays and Fridays. So yeah, just please check us out. And yeah, thank you very much again.
Yeah, thanks for you guys for coming on. If you're listening and would like to find us at the show, you can do so by finding us at EPL Roundtable. I'm on Twitter at Kevroff, and you can find us by searching EPL Roundtable on any of your podcasting sites, which you seem to have managed successfully if you're hearing this. But thanks again to you two for coming on. It was a pleasure as always, and folks at home, we hope you keep listening.